Blog Talk Radio.
Praise and thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Alua Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome, everybody. This is 11:28 at approximately 7:34 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. My name is Queen Tahira. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening in, and thank you for being a part of the Sign of the Times family. Today, we're going to have a listening session because, you know, these are our 90 days of action all the way up until December the 19th. And so in that action, we are challenging folks to get out and get involved in their community and listen to some of the archives of A Sign of the Times, as well as some of the messages of the vanguards and the ancestors of the revolution, if you will, of the evolution of African people here, especially in the U.S. and throughout the diaspora. So tonight we're listening to Minister Kwame Ture. And the title of this piece is Turning the Conscious, the Unconscious into the Conscious. And he speaks in this session about how to engage folks, how to meet them where they are, and the differences between being a motivator and an organizer. And so, you know, that's really important that we get, I guess, the difference between the two. So please listen in. Please also, if you're listening on your phone, feel free to push one. I will be monitoring the studio. But I hope that you all enjoy this listening session with Brother Kwame Ture, Ashe to this ancestor for all the love that he showed the community that continues to still live on today. So please take notes, and we'll be back. Push one if you'd like to talk. This is Queen Tahira. You are listening to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the New Power Radio Network. We also want to thank our sponsor, Manhood, Race, and Culture. Also, we want to thank Unity Design, Arlie Gordon, and Dr. James Jones, respectfully. So we'll talk to y'all on the other piece.
Own of this brother, and he's still blazing a trail, even to death. So he has an eternal flame. His flame don't burn out. Some of y'all flames burn out. His flame is still strong. Let us all get on our feet, please. And let's give a warm round of applause to a great hero all the way from Guinea, all the way from the mother country, our brother, our friend, Brother Kwame Ture. Brother Kwame Ture, as he comes down. Let's give it up as he comes down the aisle. Brother Kwame Ture, this is a historic occasion for us to bring our brother back again to the slave theater. Let's give a warm round of applause to our brother, Brother Kwame Ture, who's been on the firing line, who shook up America in 1966 when he hollered, Black power! 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 Black power, 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 black power. What time is it? What time is it? What time is it? What time is it? All right, Brother Kwame Ture, let's give it up, Brother Kwame Ture.
We want to thank you for your warm welcome. You must excuse us for sitting, but we have some pain in our legs. And that we're trying as much as possible to stay off of it while we're doing some tests with the doctors. Of course, the All African People's Revolutionary Party is always happy to be with the United African Movement. The All African People's Revolutionary Party is always happy to be the United African Movement. And there are three other members of our Central Committee who are present. Brother Ron Gibbs is here, no? Brother Ron Gibbs is here, yes. Sister Mawina Kuyate, who's also the head of the All African Women's Revolutionary Union. And of course, we're always proud of our living history. This brother who was come through many struggles was the chair of the Black Panther Party in New York during the rough times, and since joined the All African People's Revolutionary Party. I've had the honor of working with him for almost 30 years, a member of our Central Committee, the youngest member, David Brothers. Thank you. Of course, we are always honored to be with United African Movement because the world is divided into many, many different categories. But one of the categories which interests those of us who are concerned with advancing humanity the most is that between the conscious and the unconscious. This division between the conscious and the unconscious must be properly understood. The people instinctively love freedom, and they will instinctively fight for freedom. But you cannot win freedom on instincts. You can only win freedom on reason. Therefore, the unconscious are those who react on instinct. The conscious are those who react on reason. The job of the conscious is to make the unconscious conscious. Let us make a simple example. I think it was in 1992, after one more brutal beatings too many, the African population in Los Angeles, California, revolted, rose up in righteous rebellion. This was instinctively revolutionary. Instinctively in the sense that it wasn't planned. Instinctive in the sense that it was this reaction to brutality. And this instinctive revolutionary act was very costly to American capitalism. It even had to bring in the American army. Very costly. But since it was on instinct, it had no reason, nothing to direct it, it would spin itself out. Those who participated in it were largely unconscious. We must come to understand that the overwhelming majority of our people are unconscious. But just because they're unconscious, you shouldn't think they don't want freedom. As a matter of fact, sometimes the unconscious is quicker willing to give their lives in struggle than the conscious. These are simple facts. Would you imagine what it would be like when we are conscious rebellious, when we consciously organize to rebel in Los Angeles with reason? I mean, making supply lines, making sure armaments are there, having hospital aids, having fire brigades, just like they do even in Ireland, nothing big, just a little planning. Just a little planning. This is what we want to speak to you about this evening. Making the unconscious conscious. Now we must say from the very beginning, the only, underline the word only, the only route to consciousness is through struggle. Now, for example, we've shown you the unconscious struggle. Those who rose up in righteous rebellion against the state police in Los Angeles, they were consciously involved in struggle. They were involved in struggle, unconscious, but involved in struggle. The conscious must understand precisely what their task is, and we've said this 2 years ago here, we repeat it. Ours is not to teach the people to be conscious, but to make them conscious of their unconscious behavior. Our task is not to teach the conscious to be, to teach the unconscious to be conscious, but to make them conscious of their unconscious behavior. Because unconsciously, instinctively, they seek freedom. What we must do is make them conscious. Look, you want freedom anyway. Let's be serious. Let's sit down. Let's plan it. Let's wait protracted war and let's tear down the system and walk on to liberation. It's as simple as that. This aspect of the unconscious becoming conscious is linked to mobilization and organization, something we mentioned last year. We must make clear distinctions between mobilizers and organizers. To be an organizer, you must be a mobilizer. But being a mobilizer doesn't make you an organizer. Much confusion is to be found here. Malcolm X was a great mobilizer. He was a great organizer. Martin Luther King was a great mobilizer. He was not a great organizer. These facts can be easily seen from King and Malcolm. When Malcolm went to a place, he left a mosque. When King went to demonstrations, he broke down desegregation and he moved on. As a matter of fact, King was not concerned with organization to the point that even though he was the most popular Baptist preacher in America, without the shadow of a doubt, and probably beyond the shadow of a doubt, the most loved, he could not become president of the Baptist, National Baptist Convention. Yeah, so many of them. The National Baptist Convention. As a matter of fact, if my memory serves me correctly now, and I remember it was Muhammad Speaks that carried the article on the front page in 1964 when King tried to become president of the National Baptist Convention. There was so much confusion there that a minister was actually pushed off the stage and died in the struggle. Yeah. And of course, King lost. The man who won was a reactionary man by the name of Jackson. He never did nothing for the people, never cared about the people, just was a pork chop minister who used their money to put gas in his big Cadillac. But he was organized. But he was organized. We say that we must come to know the difference between mobilization and organization because the enemy will use mobilization to demobilize us. Mobilization is very easy. Very, very easy. Because since we're people who are instinctively ready to respond against acts of injustice, anytime there's one little act of injustice, we can blow it up and we'll find people who come and make some mass demonstration around it. Miss Sally lost a job. Let's rally. She will get her job back. People will come and rally. So-and-so got kicked out of school because the teacher's unjust. The people will come and rally. They will come to rally at issues. And this is what mobilization does. It mobilizes people around issues. Those of us who are revolutionary are not concerned with issues. We're concerned with the system. The difference must be properly understood. The difference must be properly understood. Mobilization usually leads to reform action, not to revolutionary action. If we would look scientifically at the October 16th Million and More March, we would see clearly that this was a mobilized event, not an organized event. We must know clearly the difference between mobilization and organization. One of the characteristics of mobilization is that it is temporary. Organization is permanent and eternal. Clear differences must be made because the unconscious can usually be captured easily around one issue items, around mobilization items, but it's hard to catch them around organization. But these unconscious must be brought to organization. We must transform mobilization to organization. We say the enemy will come and use mobilization to demobilize us. Many brothers and sisters who've been to the Million and More March will say to you, I was there. Well, what are you doing today, my sister? I was there. There weren't too many sisters out there, but you know, with a million brothers together, you know where I had to be. I was there. And then, of course, you find brothers, yeah, I was there, I was there. I helped you. What are you doing today, brother? If we're not careful, we allow mobilization to become events. The struggle is never an event. It's a process, a continual, eternal process. We say it is our job to use mobilization to drive us to organization. You know our theme is organization. We want power. We don't want money. We don't want fame. We don't want fortune. We don't want popularity. We want power. Power. And power comes only from the organized masses. Power comes only from the organized masses. Therefore, since this is what we're concerned with, power, and we as a Pan-Africanist, we have every right to be concerned with it. Africa, after all, is the richest continent on the face of the earth. Properly organized, should be the most powerful continent on the face of the earth. Therefore, our drive towards power is clear. We want power, and we can only have power through the organized masses. Of course, capitalism, a system which in deforming our thinking always seeks to make it appear as if the organized masses is some unattainable goal. Even the other day when speaking to a sister who sister's been involved in activities over a period of years, she said, Kwame Ture, so you when you say a mass party, what do you mean? I said, I mean a mass party. She said, but the APRP goes everywhere in England, they go in the Caribbean, in the United States, in Africa, and they're always saying about a mass party. What do you mean? I said, every African in the world inside our party. She said, are you going to get that? I said, that's what I'm working for. And if I don't get it, my granddaughter going to get it. But I'm working for it. Her disbelief comes from the fact that capitalism tells us that, well, you can be scientific about everything except human nature. That people are so different, they have such different tastes, such different tra-la-la-la, that you can't bring them together under the same roof. This is a lie. We will never tire saying it. Capitalism does not lie some of the time. It lies all of the time. When it tells the truth, it's a result of a double lie. It's a logical fact. It's a logical fact. So capitalism has this belief that you can't organize all the people around the same thing. That's not true. You can organize all the people around one thing, truth. Now, what capitalism will try to make it appear as if the truth is not one truth, but anybody can have the truth. This is stupidity. Nobody's born with the truth inside of them. If they were, they wouldn't need to live. We come to know the truth from outside of us. Some people think that they know the truth because they were born to know the truth. That's a lie. You know the truth from constant struggle against lies. That's how you know the truth. Constant struggle against lies. For example, they try to make it appear as if we Africans will not arrive at uniting ourselves even the question around our identity. Well, you may call some of them Africans, but some call themselves black, some still call themselves colored, that's fact, they do that. But this is because they've been miseducated by a system which seeks to keep us divided, and this is the truth. And this is the truth. Obviously, we cannot be all of us so many different things. We must be one thing. Of course, for our party, there's no question. As for the United African Movement, we're Africans. End of discussion. End of discussion. This struggle is not an easy struggle. The struggle to go from Negro to black was a difficult struggle. Capitalism did everything to roll it back. Even had us confused. I'm not black. Look at me. I'm brown colored. Yes. I'm not black. I got Indian blood in me. What nonsense they didn't have us say just to run away from the truth. We told them then, it is more difficult to go from Negro to black than it is to go from black to African. Many people criticized us for our efforts. Oh, in the 1970s, we had our last press conference. We said, we're going to put the word Africans on the lip of every African in America, and we're not going to use the capitalist media press. And we have done it, and we have not used the capitalist media press. As a matter of fact, the capitalist media press, in trying to stop us from going to Africans in America, tried to throw out African Americans. They did it. We saw the whole scene. It's our job. We followed it carefully. Of course, they want to say African Americans. Of course, that keeps us exactly where we are. If you're African American, you're obviously not the same like an African Kenyan. And certainly not the same like an African Brazilian. And certainly not the same like an African Trinidadian, etc., etc., etc. But once you're just African, ain't no question. Ain't no question. You African, yeah, where you were born? Trinidad. You African, yeah, where were you born? Uganda. You African, yeah, where were you born? Egypt. You African, yeah, all Africans. Once you have proper identity, one of your biggest problems is solved. Because a people must know their national interests. A people must have a clear understanding of their national interest. The job of American imperialism is to let us think that our national interest is within the confines of American imperialism. That's why black American, African American, anything but make sure they hold on to America. When the conscious comes to understand that they're Africans, born in America, Africans living in America, their whole outlook changes completely. America no longer becomes their world. Of course, this is a difficult task because America convinced everyone that she is the world. I'm sometimes amazed when I come in this country and hear them say world news. Here they come. World news. Today, President Clinton said, world news. Today, Newt Gingrich said, world news, Dole, who's running for president, can't. It's like, you know, it's like their World Football Association. No, nobody played but them. Yeah. So the first conscious act in organizing our people is to let them know who they are. If you think you're an American, you will fight to protect the interests of capitalist America. If you know you ain't no American, you fight to destroy every aspect of American capitalism. Our people have been unconsciously moving towards Africa. You know, I am very fortunate. I spend a lot of time with our people, and I always stay with the poor. I stay with the poor because the poor, they are pure. I mean, the poor will fight and give their lives for positions which they are incapable of occupying. They shock me sometimes with their naivety and their honesty. No wonder they can so easily be exploited. I remember one sitting in Ghana at the house of Agba Mohammed, who's the international representative of the Nation of Islam. And there was a lot of people in the house, so I walked outside the gate, and I sat down. There's a little kennel there on a concrete. I sat down by the kennel. The gardener next door came and sat down next to me. We began talking. So we talked naturally about Ghana. We talked about Ghana. We talked about Nkrumah. So after a while, he said, "Were you born in Ghana? Are you Ghanaian?" I said, "No, I wasn't born in Ghana. I just live in Guinea." He said, "But you know a lot about Ghana." I said, "Well, yeah, I did a lot of study of the Ghana Revolution." I didn't tell him that I was the political secretary of Kwame Nkrumah when Nkrumah was co-president in Guinea. I didn't even tell him who I was. You know, Kwame Ture meant nothing to him, just another name. After talking with the man for about half an hour, you know what the man said to me? Doesn't even know me now. He said, "You know what?" He said, "Listen, I only went to third standard." That's like about third grade. He said, "I don't have no education, but people like me, we could fight and put people like you in power and you'd help us." Yes. I've seen it everywhere. In the South, I used to see people die for positions they couldn't occupy. As a matter of fact, people who couldn't get to the university died so students who had the ability could get to university. People who couldn't vote died so people become mayors. It is these pure poor that we must be concerned with. These are the ones we must organize. These are the real makers of history. Forget the ones who are always talking and doing nothing. Get the poor, the pure. What's their movement? The instincts are always correct. our people have been unconsciously moving more and more towards Africa. Of that, there isn't the slightest question. I saw it years ago. In the mid-1970s, I was going through Mississippi. I'd spent the 60s there and visited a sister whom I knew was very active in the movement. She'd now been married and had a child. So the husband and her were very excited. They wanted to show me the child, as any parents would be. And of course, me too, I was excited because I knew it was a little girl. I wanted to see my granddaughter, if you will. So when she came, I held the door. I said, "What's the name?" She said, "Adjola." I said, "Adjola?" She said, "Yes." I said, "What does it mean?" She said, "I don't know. I just made it up. Does it sound African?" This was in the mid-1970s in Mississippi. I remember in the late 1970s, I saw a young man. He was wearing a red, black, and green jacket. I stopped the man, young boy. I said, "Young blood, what's this red, black, and green?" He said, "Those are our colors." I said, "What do you mean, our colors?" He said, "Man, these are our colors. You don't know our colors?" I said, "No, what do you mean, our colors?" He said, "Man, red for blood, green for the lamb, black for us. You don't know this?" I said, "No, I don't know this." He said, "Man, where are you coming from?" He started to walk away. I said, "Brother, have you ever heard of a man called Marcus Garvey?" He said, "Marcus Garvey, who is he?" I said, "He the one who gave you the colors." The unconscious are moving towards Africa. It is job of the conscious to make them conscious of their unconscious actions. Since our people are moving towards Africa, it behooves us clearly to come seriously and to organize properly this movement and putting Africa as its primary. This is the job of the conscious. But the conscious gets their sustenance from the unconscious. I am certain that most of the brothers and sisters attending the Million and More March were unconscious. Unconscious in the sense that they do not consciously try to develop themselves in a systematically basis, on a day-to-day basis, to make a contribution to the people. But the milieu which that unconscious mass created now makes it possible for the conscious mass to make this unconscious mass quickly conscious. Quickly conscious. And this is our task. I had the honor, when working for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in 1968 in Washington, D.C., after having served as 1 year as the chair of the organization, of being with the STIC team that helped develop the first Black United Front in this country. It came out of Washington, D.C. It was well organized. After leaving for Africa, and much confusion, mainly with the infusion of money into the Black United Front, the front fell apart. Moving to the All African People's Revolutionary Party, we have done everything in our possibility to create an African United Front. What do we mean by an African United Front? We are saying that those organizations which are politically on the front lines fighting for our people, like the NAACP, like the Urban League, like the Nation of Islam, etc., etc., should come together and form a united front. This united front is a very simple thing now, a very simple task. All it means is that we come together and have common meetings. And if we hear one attacking the other newspaper, we don't respond to the newspaper. We telephone each other and ask them. Our party has been doing much work on this. Because we're among comrades who work, we will give you some of our files, which is not made public. Only here are we doing so. The Nation of Islam was an observer at the Washington, D.C. Black United Front. Although invited to join, they felt that at that time they wanted to observe. They were allowed full participation except voting, which they themselves accepted as observers. That is, they could fully participate in every level of the discussion. When the United Front broke up, the All African People's Revolutionary Party quickly moved to put together a united front. We had brought together Mr. Roy Wilkins, who was alive at that time. This was in 1972. Vernon Jordan. Who was before Vernon Jordan? The one who died in Africa. Whitney Young. No, it was. I'm sorry. Whitney Young had died. Correct. It was Vernon Jordan. Vernon Jordan was then at the Urban League. Of course, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was alive, and he was sending Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as his representative. Jesse Jackson was representing PUSH. Dorothy Height, the National Council of Negro Women. Reverend Abernathy, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, in his core, and we represented the All African People's Revolutionary Party. My brothers and sisters, I'll tell you the truth. You must never get discouraged in struggle. You will build something, and the enemy will knock it down, and you'll have to start from zero. But as we say in our party, we're starting from a higher qualified zero. You must never be discouraged in struggle. As a matter of fact, the easiest way for the enemy to take you out is to make you frustrated and disgusted. Oh, I went to that meeting. They ain't doing nothing. I ain't got no time for them. Until they get serious, I ain't going there. What you doing? I ain't doing nothing. And they really think that they're intelligent. They think they've made a great statement. So you must not be discouraged, but the enemy's job is to discourage us. We did a lot of work trying to get that meeting together. A lot of work. A lot of work. And because of a Zionist plot, they wrecked the entire meeting in 48 hours. The meeting was wrecked, but we were not. And we are revolutionaries. You knock it down, we're coming back stronger. We accepted defeat, we licked our wounds, we pursued our battle. We continued with this aspect of it. During that time, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad passed. Before his death, you know, death has robbed me of so many things in life. Really has. The most recent one was I have a brother who's in jail in Florida for killing a white policeman. This brother has been isolated in jail. Nobody writes him, so he has a lot of problems. And his father and I knew each other from struggling days back in the 60s in Dayton. Asked me to write him. I wrote him. So you know when brothers are in jail, they ain't got nothing to do. So he writes me a letter every day. And I respond to all his letters because he's in jail, you know. And last year, when speaking on telephone, I told him, I think I have everything careful. I'm going to speak to Bill Kunstler, and I'm sure Bill Kunstler will look at the case. In March of last year, I had lunch with Bill Kunstler and, in New York here, and Bill Kunstler agreed to take the case. And he said, but you know, I'm just a little bit busy now. Give me about 2 or 3 months, and then send me a letter, and I'll pick up the case. So I waited 2 or 3 months, and when I wrote the letter, before the letter arrived, Kunstler was dead. So death has robbed me of many political victories in life and created more work for me. But I'm a revolutionary. I accept it because I know my death is going to create a lot of work for others. So it's robbed me of a lot. The Honorable Elijah's Muhammad's death robbed the All African People's Revolution Party of a golden chance to create the United Front. Of course, you know, when the Nation of Islam came up, there was first Wallace Dean Muhammad, the son of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and then, you know, there was a little discussion, and finally, Minister Louis Farrakhan decided to return with the original theories and actions of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But Minister Louis Farrakhan first came out, of course. Now, let's let you know, I've known Minister Louis Farrakhan for over 30 years, and worked with him for over 30 years. Of course, we're not in the press all the time, but we're in contact all the time. And Minister Louis Farrakhan and I discussed much, step by step. Of course, the only thing I had in my mind was the African United Front. That's all I want. And Minister Farrakhan said, okay, he sees it, he understands it, but he needs to get a little bit stronger. Fine. 1982, our party made an assessment, and we said, okay, the Nation of Islam is strong enough now to do the work for the African United Front. We cannot do it, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, because from the time they see us, we tell them we're revolutionary, we're socialist, we ain't bending, we anti-Zionist, you can do what you want, that's your problem. You understand? So we don't bend. But the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he's charming and, you know, he's sentimental. Minister can quote Bibles, so he can sit down with preachers and all these others, etc. So after observing his movements, the All African People's Revolutionary Party mandated me to go and visit Minister Louis Farrakhan and to give him the files of the African United Front and tell him that it was his responsibility to call the front. Of course, it was a task that I enjoyed undertaking. I hadn't seen him in some time, and I had a beautiful day. We spent the entire day at his house there in Chicago. You know, he just separated from Dean Wallace Muhammad, and his force had been coming back. And I took for him some old copies of Muhammad Speaks. Now, if you look at the old copies of Muhammad Speaks, every middle page that you open had two black hands reaching across the oceans calling for a united front. Every issue of Muhammad Speaks. We must know our history, and we must never be ungrateful to those who taught us. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught me an awful lot, and I know he's taught our people an awful lot, and for that alone, I'll be forever grateful to him. Minister Farrakhan agreed to take the program. He had no choice. I told him, this is your program. This is what your leader says you're supposed to do. He ain't my leader, he's your leader. And you say you're following his footsteps, you know, and he was getting ready to do it. He didn't do it. Here's your chance. You're supposed to do what he didn't do, you know. So, of course, Farrakhan had no choice. He had to accept it. We were well prepared. Everything was in proper order to have, finally, once again, our African United Front. By 19, when was Jesse first talking about running for president? Was 1984. It was announced. When did Farrakhan make the alliance with him? November 83. So by 82, I left me. I went back to Africa. Everything was moving. I was in contact with Minister Farrakhan. Our party people in contact, feeding us step by step. I came back in early 1983. I met with Minister Farrakhan. I explained to him precisely the steps that we thought we could help in bringing the African United Front together. After some time, he asked that we have a meeting late in the year, probably around September, October. I'm telling the truth exactly what was said at the meeting. Minister Farrakhan said to me, he said, at that time, Jesse Jackson had declared he was going to run for presidency, and he was under a lot of threats, you know. And I certainly thought that some crazy whitey was going to pop him, you know. But I have no problem with it. My life is on the line all the time. I put my life on the line for one thing. You put your life on the line for another thing. I ain't got no problem with it. You know, so Minister Louis Farrakhan came to see me. He said, you know, and he's very clever, Minister Farrakhan. He's very clever. When he's already, he wants to soften up, he comes, he always plays that violin for you. Oh, Brother Kwame, you're my younger brother. But you know, you are so profound in political analysis. You surpass us all, that even though I am your older brother, I must come and seek advice from you. He's rough, you know, he's rough on that violin. He sings some sweet songs on that violin. So, of course, after seeking my advice, he came to seek my advice. He said, I want to make a decision. I said, what's that decision? He said, I want to put the FOI at the disposition of Jesse Jackson to protect him. I said, well, if you want to do that, that's your decision. He said, well, you don't seem enthusiastic about it. I said, well, I'm not. He said, well, Jesse Jackson might get killed. I said, he probably will get killed. He said, don't you think we need to protect him? I said, that's your decision. It's your FOI. You know, he said, so now he saw that it was getting serious. He said, you know, he's clever. He's clever. Because he'll switch on you fast. You know, if you don't switch with him, you'd be in back gear while he's in front gear. You're already saying yes when you start, thought you were saying no. Yeah, he's rough. He said, well, I bet if you were being hounded and attacked by people, you'd want the FOI to protect you. I reminded him very slowly and very carefully. Minister Farrakhan, when I was elected chair of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the first public meeting I had as chair was a meeting with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in his house in Chicago, where I spent 15 hours. In fact, it was here that I met Muhammad Ali for the first time. This is way back. This is before, well, you old people, so before you were born. We're talking about 1966 here, easily. 30 years ago, yeah. At the end of the meeting, of course, you know I'm a young man. I'm 26 years old at this time, you know, 26. I've heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad all my life. What am I going to say to this man? This man used to raise me up, you understand? This man taught me things, gave me courage. I said, he's saying that on the radio? Is he crazy? Yeah, he's a white devil. That's what I said. They ain't nothing but white devils. That's what they, yeah. Yes. He'd tell the truth right out there. He wouldn't bite his tongue for nothing. You know, and I reminded Honorable Elijah, the Minister of Farrakhan, I said, at the end of the day, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad looked at me. I was sitting directly across from Mr. Stable. He said, son, he said, the devil wants you. I said, yes, sir. He said, son, the devil is out to get you. I said, yes, sir. He said, son, you must be careful. I said, yes, sir, I'll be very careful all my life. I've been working in a mine pit among the enemy, and I'm older now, I have more experience. So he said, they're mean, you know. I said, yes, sir, I know they're mean. He said, they're going to get you. I said, yes, sir. He said, so, son, I'm going to put the FBI at your FOI at your disposition. Everywhere you go, I'm going to send out an order that the FOI must protect you. Now, you know, this was really too much for me, you know. So I said, well, sir, thank you, you know, but you know, the FOI is so busy. I'm so busy. I'm running here and there. This will be such a task for them. Really, I thank you, sir. I really appreciate it, sir. And I, you know, I go through all this humble pie about thank you, but I don't need it. You know what he said? He said, son, I wasn't asking you. That's just what he told me. And if you go and look at pictures in the past, you'll see everywhere I go, the FOI was there protecting me from the 60s. You will look and you will see that. So I reminded this to Minister Louis Farrakhan. I reminded him of it. And I said, Minister Farrakhan, the FOI will protect me, but I promise you they will never protect me because I want to be President of the United States of America. They might protect me because I want to rip up America, but never because I want to be President of America. Well, he saw that his clever trick didn't go so well. So he backed up again. He said, well, what do you think about the alliance? I said, it's a great mistake. He said, why? I said, because Jesse Jackson is a Democrat first and foremost. The Democratic Party jumps to the tunes of the Zionists. While the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was a confrontational organization and confronted Zionism outright, the first place I read about the Palestinian struggle in this country was in the Mohammed Speaks newspaper. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught me about Palestine when no left-wing paper in this country did. And they talk about nationalism as chauvinism. Look at that. I saw pictures of Malcolm X shaking the hands of PLO representatives when the PLO was first organized in 1964 in Mohammed Speaks. In Mohammed Speaks. Therefore, I told him, I said, the Zionists, they hate us, but they know you the first. So what I'm worried about is when they spoil the Union and it splits, you understand, which side of the fence you going to be on? Because I know Jesse going to be with the Zionists. Because that's the Democratic Party. I'm just brutally honest with you. I'm telling you exactly what was said between us. We had a very frank discussion. After that discussion, I told him, what about the African United Front? He said, it's still good. Of course, me, myself, I knew with the thing with Jesse, it was problems. But in spite of obstacles, you must do your work. In spite of obstacles, you must persevere. I said, well, I want you to meet John Jacobs of the Urban League. He said, I've never met him. I said, I'd like you to meet him. He said, you could arrange a meeting? Will he meet with me? I said, yeah, I can arrange a meeting. He'll meet with you. I arranged a meeting at Johnny Jacobs' office here in New York, in Manhattan. The first time they met each other, I just sat in the background, talk. So well did our meeting go that Minister Louis Farrakhan and Johnny Jacobs signed a letter that day issuing a call for a united front among the political organizations in this country. We have it in our files. When the time comes, we will demonstrate this. The Urban League has a copy, Farrakhan has a copy, and Major Hatcher from Gary has a copy, because at that time he was head of the mayors. And we were working with him, of course. Of course, I went back to Africa. It didn't take me long before I heard all this nonsense about gutter religion, Judaism, gutter or dirty religion or whatever, whatever, and Jesse having to split from Farrakhan, and you know what happened. Of course, I knew it would happen. But when we were with Jacobs, Minister Farrakhan and myself, one of the things we agreed upon was that we must have the phone numbers of each other. They didn't even have each other's phone numbers. And we must have the house phone numbers. So that when we hear something on the radio that Farrakhan said this about Jacobs, before Jacobs attacks Farrakhan, Jacob will call Farrakhan and see if what the paper says is true. We agreed to this. We did agree to this. Of course, this was not written in a letter. This was a verbal commitment. But we're brothers. We can't lie. And I'm a revolutionary. I can't lie to you. Of course, when Jesse Jackson made his split and the Zionists once again with a nice plot did everything, Johnny Jacobs, without calling Minister Farrakhan to see if in fact he made the statement, what was the content in which the statement was made, wrote public articles condemning Minister Louis Farrakhan. Once again, Zionism had come to block and destroy the unity of the African community. We are not stopping. And the Million and More March puts us properly in a position to create a united front in this country of the political organizations, given some semblance of unity and creating some atmosphere of unity where we can come to organize our people. I must tell you, the major enemy to our unity is Zionism. I tell you this as a result of over 30 years of constant struggle to organize and unify our people. I know them every step of the way. They are the slimiest slime that imperialism has ever produced. They will do everything to keep us divided. Want to run our own concepts for us, teach us. They fight to teach our children. Isn't that nice of them? Quite liberal. Quite liberal. Their job is to keep us enslaved. Their job is to control us. So that while controlling us, American imperialism and the right wing and the racist wing will be venting all their rage on us and on nobody else. But we who are determined see victory even in death. We're going to have a united front. Our party, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, has decided to direct its attention for the next 3 years into two major areas. In the 1960s, when COINTELPRO broke down and destroyed many organizations, and they did, they also destroyed coordination between organizations. Thus today, there is no coordination between organizations. And people come to think that the struggle in America is not like it was in the 60s. Why, America is more ripe for revolution today than it was in the 60s. The people are more politically conscious. The conditions are worse. When you have falling conditions and rising consciousness, you've got to have an explosion. You've got to have it. Either it will be instinct, which will be revolt, or either be reasoned and organized, which will be revolution. But you can be sure you're going to have an explosion. We say that people's consciences are rising more and more. Even movements that we never thought about in the 60s, like the women's movement, the ecology movement, they are spreading everywhere. The right wing in this country has made a proper shift. It no longer sees minorities as their major enemy, nor the left wing. It sees the U.S. government as their major enemy. America is more ripe for revolution today than ever before. Africans have a particular responsibility here to the struggles of their people and to their future generations in directing this struggle to be nothing other than a revolutionary struggle. I mean this in every sense of the word. If you look throughout history, as a matter of fact, 2 days ago I was in Ohio, and a journalist asked me, what do you think is the greatest contribution that the Africans have made to America? I said, help to civilize it. It's a fact. It's a fact. I know who I am. I know I'm equal to everybody else. They don't know it. They're the ones who have to be taught it, not me. Not me. So consequently, our job is to civilize America. If you look, this is exactly what we've been doing. Everywhere you see struggles for justice, you will see Africans out front, the first to die every time, in every battle. I mean, even go back to the American Revolution, Crispus Attucks. The first to die, instead of fighting with the Indians and joining up with the Indians and whooping George Washington. That's what he should have done. And that's why we must rectify the error today. Of course, Chinese say if you make an error, you know it's an error, you don't correct the error, you've made your second error. We have to correct that error. We're always on the front lines. Look at the history of the labor movement. Africans everywhere on the front lines. Look at the peace movement. They try to make it look like a white movement, but I know it was the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee that gave the slogan, hell no, we won't go, and broke the draft in this country. And I know it was Martin Luther King who was the center of the peace movement in the anti-Vietnam War in this country. Once again, Africans up front in the fight for justice. Anywhere you look, you will see us up front. We're unconsciously up front. It is time for us to become consciously up front. This then is the task that we come to put before you, your responsibility. Every time we come here, we tell you this is our problem, this is our responsibility here. The capitalist system has but one job through its media: make the Africans irresponsible, make them frivolous, make them hate themselves, make them have low esteem of themselves. Just in one word, keep them demobilized and ineffective and tools for us when we need to exploit them and to turn them against their own people. This is the plan. We have to counteract this. We have to counteract this. And the television does it 24 hours a day, nonstop. We who say we are conscious cannot speak of being tired. As a matter of fact, even as a young boy, I remember sometimes seeing my father. You know, it's true, they don't make men the way they used to make them, because I'd never be the man he was. I'd never do what he did. I can't even try. But I would see my father coming very, very tired from working, and I'd say to him, why don't you rest? He says, when I die, I will have enough time to rest. So from him I've learned that I'm gonna work myself to death for my people. Yeah, because I can't rest now. I'm gonna work myself to death for my people. I know if I can't rest now, I know I'm at rest. And I'm not like Martin Luther King. He sang free at last. I'm gonna sing, I'm so glad I laid this burden down. But until I lay it down, I ain't gonna make one squeak about it. I'm gonna carry it with my head up, just like my grandmother carried her head up on plantations. Your job as the conscious is to make our unconscious conscious of their unconscious movements. This can only be done in organization. This can only be done in organization. We repeat it over and over again. Every time you see an intelligent man, intelligent woman, they don't attack the enemy unless they have some force behind them. I sometimes look at our brothers who go to jail. By themselves, they think they're going to go to jail and take on the enemy. Me, I've been to jail many, many times in my life, all over the world. And every time I've been to jail, all I do is get one message out to one member, any member of my organization, and my task is finished. My job is finished. My organization knows I'm in jail. Either I get out, they fight to get me out, they can't get me out, I'm organizing in jail. But I ain't got to worry about no courts, no judges, no lawyers. The organization gonna do that. That's why you need organization. The police arrest me tonight. By the morning, I'm walking out of jail, and the police gonna be in trouble. Yeah, cause they're gonna find. Look here, let me show you a little tactic. When America bombed Libya in 1986, a member of our Central Committee, then by the name of Bob Brown, we sent him quickly to Libya to see what was happening. He got an American passport. Now, if you got an American passport, you got the right to enter any European country and stay there for 3 months without a visa. You understand that? Now, these little Swiss people, because we had pictures of Gaddafi we wanted to show. We wanted to make sure we're in harmony with the work they were doing. So he had Gaddafi's pictures in his briefcase. They stopped him, deported him, sent him back to France without even giving him a chance to make a telephone call. Could you imagine how crazy we were? We didn't know where the brother was. You understand? When he explained to us what happened, we had to teach the Swiss a lesson. So he gets a little lesson, no big problem. They arrested him on a Wednesday, on a Tuesday evening, deported him, all that, and Wednesday, we got the news. Wednesday evening, we made a plan. On Thursday morning, we want everyone in the party to call comrades and allies and every friend they know and have them call the Swiss embassy nonstop. Ask them one question: why did you arrest Bob Brown? That's all. The Swiss embassy did no work that Thursday. None whatsoever at all. And the act is a legal act. Quite legal. We did it Thursday and Friday. And then on Saturday, we sent them a telegram. Anytime you see an African anywhere in the world coming to Switzerland and he has legal papers, don't mess with him. He might be Bob Brown, who represents Africans who've had clashes with American capitalism in over 267 cities. We're sure the Swiss don't want any of this action. Very simple. But he's got an organization. He didn't have to make one phone call. And when anybody else goes through Switzerland, they don't mess with us at all. And we told him, this is just the first level. You mess with us again, we take it to a higher level. And you mess with us again, we take it to a higher level. And we can do it because we got organization. The conscious, no organization. Malcolm X was a conscious brother. Before, when he was an unconscious brother, he wasn't a member of any organization. He didn't care about no organization. But Malcolm X was ready to throw a brick against the police, just like any conscious brother. He was unconscious. When Malcolm became conscious, he became a member of the Nation of Islam. And when Malcolm left the Nation of Islam, Malcolm, knowing the necessity of organizations, created two organizations, the Muslim Mosque Incorporated and the Organization of African American Unity. Malcolm X knew the necessity of organization. Our people have only one stage left in their struggle, and that is mass organization. It's the only stage left. We, of course, you know, you learn in many, many different ways. And one of the slowest ways of learning is one known as method of elimination. Method of elimination means you try that, it didn't work. You try that, it didn't work. You try that, it didn't work. While it's the slowest way of learning, it's the surest. And we have tried everything except mass organization. The Fifth Pan-African Congress, held in 1945, called on Africans all over the world to have mass movements. You know, Africa, as she's held in racism today all over the world, even Africans do not know the contributions which Africa has made to world civilization in the past or which she continues to make in the present. One of Africa's great contributions to world revolutionary movements is the mass party. We have a mass character to our struggle. In 1945, at the Fifth Pan-African Congress, the delegates there issued a resolution. They said, "We are in the final confrontation with colonialism and racism. We call for mass parties to be set up in Africa, throughout the Caribbean, and mass movement in England and in the United States." Do you know that this meeting was held in 1945. By 1952, Supreme Court decision was ready, and by 1956, Martin Luther King had hit Montgomery with a mass movement. If you look throughout Africa, the length and breadth of Africa, the independence struggle was nothing less than a mass struggle. In the Caribbean, mass struggle. In Britain, when we rise up there, mass struggle. And in America, unconscious as we are, at least we know we only rise up when the masses are instinctively ready. Mass struggle everywhere. Therefore, we already have the character of mass struggle. Our task is to take this character and make it permanent into mass organization. We are going to organize the masses of our people. I want you to know that. I want you to know that in spite of yourself, you're going to organize the masses of your people. Because your culture is so strong that in spite of you, it will defeat American imperialist culture. I'll give you one simple example. Imperialism, seeing this mass character of the African movement in the 1960s, had to do everything possible in the 1970s to go quickly to an individualism, me thing, my thing, I, me, my, individual. They made a whole lot of propaganda about it. And of course, they had to have the art reflect this. Therefore, they were serious. They didn't play. They broke up the Beatles. They broke up the Supremes. They broke up the Jackson Fives. They broke up everybody. There could be three Jacksons, but they couldn't be three Jackson brothers. They had to be each of them their own superstar, individual by themselves. This was to reflect this individual culture so that it would see, oh yeah, everybody's superstar, so this communal thing ain't going. I guess we all got to be superstars, and everybody trying to be a superstar. They don't play now. They don't play. But African culture, dig this. Alpha's already broken down this individual garbage, even though the artists who were doing it were unconscious of it. Certainly, while rap has given us a lot of conscious artists, it has produced a lot of rubbish, too. This is a fact. This is a fact. And even they who had this rubbish, while they were showing rubbish, they were showing communal activity. They were showing communal groups. It was no longer the one, and they were showing once again Africa, call and response. Call and response. That's which they tried to destroy in our culture. So there's victory for us now. I want you to know we're going to win in spite of ourselves. We are going to organize in spite of ourselves. The Honorable Marcus Garvey said, organize your people. Organize your people. Organize your people. Organize your people. If you don't organize them, conditions will organize them. And the conditions are here. We must be one step ahead of it. We come again to speak of organization. That's the only task we have before us. Our party's going to heighten its task for United Front, but we ask you, the United African Movement, to heighten your task. We must take lessons here from people. Martin Luther King was a great man, taught me a lot. But one of the greatest things Martin Luther King taught me was humility and using the nonviolent spirit within the African community. Martin Luther King was a living example of this. He was attacked by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He was attacked by Malcolm X. He was attacked by Minister Louis Farrakhan. He was attacked by Roy Wilkins. He was attacked by Whitney Young. He was attacked by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I myself attacked him. But Dr. King never attacked any of us. Never. Never. Malcolm X recognized this error. When he came back to form the Organization of African American Unity, he said, I've said a lot of mean and evil things about a lot of people. I hope they can forgive me. I made an error. I want us to work in a spirit of unity and harmony, and we must do this. The masses have demonstrated to us by the million or more march that they want unity. That's the message they sent. This is the message the unconscious sends to the conscious. And they do this unconsciously. Therefore, we have a responsibility to do this. The United African Movement must come and make serious moves to bring a united front of all the political organizations fighting for the people in New York City. All that is stopping us from undertaking this task is will and determination. The task is not an easy task, but we're revolutionaries. We don't look for easy struggle. I mean, who looks for an easy struggle? Somebody who don't want to struggle. Somebody who don't want to struggle, look for eager struggle. You want to struggle, give me the most difficult. That's what we did in SNCC. Y'all want to struggle? Yeah. Well, take Georgia, Mississippi. That's the worst one. We want struggle. That's where we're going. We want struggle. We want the most difficult struggle. The United African Movement has a responsibility to do this. It has conscious elements. It has a constant base, a secured base, independent base. There's no reason why it should not be the leader in calling for this, going to meetings, preaching, and begging people to come to unify with each other. The All African People's Revolutionary Party will never tire in this task. We've already drawn up our plans for our next attack for the United Front. Meetings are already being scheduled for me with different people whom we have to see, who we feel can play key postures in bringing about this united front. But the conscious must learn one thing. Sometimes the conscious have on their own to try and decide what is the movement of the unconscious, what are their aspirations. But when the unconscious speak and tell you, it is your responsibility to implement it. When the unconscious tell us, with a million or more people, that they want unity, then the conscious has a responsibility to implement unity. If they do not, they should be charged with negligence and should be shot in the morning for betraying their people. Some people think traitors are those who do something against the movement. You can betray the movement by not doing something for the movement. This must be properly understood. Of course, you know we say it all the time because of the truth. We in the African Revolution are so weak. I mean, we really are weak. We are the only revolution, the only movement, that allow traitors to strut in our communities with impunity. It is a level of weakness. The one that pains me the most, especially one who's always on the front lines, is that we have to leave our wounded on the battlefield to be picked by vultures. We have prisoners of wars in prisons in America all over, and we cannot even support their families, and they're in jail for us. These are facts. These are facts. If we care about building a movement, we come to address the movement seriously. Seriously. The other day I had to write Brother Sudiata Okoli a letter. I was ashamed. I was ashamed. We haven't even done anything for his family. Any liberation movement, you're a fighter, you get wounded, the first thing the liberation movement do is come to support the family. This is how weak we are, but we ain't going to be weak always. And the faster we work to get strength, the quicker we will arrive at strength. I say sometimes we have to try and figure out what the unconscious wants, but once the unconscious tells you, then you have a responsibility to do it, and if you don't do it, you've betrayed the movement. All that the Million and More March has told me is that they want unity. Hitler said, tell the truth, tell a lie a million times, and the people will come to think it's the truth. Revolutionaries say, tell the truth a couple of times, you will smash a million lies. And that's exactly what the Million and More March did. That's exactly what it is. If you would look at the lies of the capitalist media, you would think all we're concerned about is drug addicts shooting each other, crime, raping each other, ripping off each other, ain't concerned about each other's insecurity. October 16th, one day put all those lies in the garbage can forever. Do not think that capitalism takes defeat laying down. They're going to climb back out of the garbage can. They're going to wash themselves off, give themselves another scent and odor, and infiltrate in another area of the movement. Do not think that capitalism, when they saw the Million and More March, just sat down like the rest of them and said, oh, it was a nice march. They said, this is serious out here. They said, we cannot play with this. That's precisely what they said. And on October 15th, they started heighten up their organization. What have we done? We must heighten our organizations. It is only in unity that we will defeat the enemy, and the enemy will be defeated, therefore we will be unified. Kwame Nkrumah precisely said, unity presupposes organization. You know, many brothers and sisters think they're in unity with the people and they don't belong to no organization at all. All the time. Oh, I'm what organization you belong to? I belong to no organization, but I'm in unity with the brothers and sisters. Unity presupposes organization. If you're not an organization, you're not united with your brothers and sisters. If anything happens to me tonight, I call a brother or sister at my party in New York. You understand? If things get rough, we call each other. We decide what spot we're going to get together and go down together at least. But if you're in unity with the people and you don't know who to call, who to turn to, you understand? What is that unity other than an illusion? Brothers and sisters, we're about to conclude. Our task again is to drive you to organization. As a young man, I came to understand the necessity of organization. Malcolm X helped me to see it greatly. When Malcolm X left the Nation of Islam, there was great competition between young groups to pull him. The RAM, the Revolutionary Action Movement, then headed up by a brother known as Max Stanford, now known as Ahmed Mohammed, was fighting to get him. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was fighting to get him. But Malcolm was assassinated when he was in between organizations, building organizations. I saw that quickly. I said, oh, so they killed him before he got his organizations off the ground. If Malcolm had gotten his organizations off the ground, they couldn't touch him that easily, because Malcolm was not a mobilizer, he was an organizer. And so is life, that even when they assassinated Malcolm, who was the organizer, because he didn't have organizations in place, and there were so many contradictions in our community that a unified response was not possible, when King the Mobilizer was killed, the unified response was possible. History plays itself out, even if the leaders play themselves out. History will not be denied. I say we will be organized. History cannot be denied. You can either be part of the historical process, come to take the serious task of organizing your people on a day-to-day basis, or you can come to the slave every Wednesday night, clap, feel good, jump up, say you were there, and go back and wait till next Tuesday night. It's Tuesday night next week, isn't it? Yes. Yeah. We must become examples for our people. When they see us organizing, they get organized. Our people are looking for direction. Our people are looking for direction, and the conscious must provide that direction. And the direction the conscious must provide is to make the unconscious conscious of their unconscious behavior. So no master plan is necessary here. None whatsoever. The people are looking for unity. Let's give them unity in united fronts. The people are looking for power. Let's give them organization. The masses want unity. Let's move from mass mobilization to mass organization. We of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, always honored to come amongst you of the United African Movement. When we come amongst you, we can talk about things that we can't talk on other levels because the level of consciousness is not the same. When we go to others, we spend our time talking about organizations, but on the level we do with you, you are fighters. You are activists. But you must come to mold your struggle together. Every time I come here at Wednesday night, I see so many people. I am sure the United African Front has at least some membership of over 1,000, not so. And I'm sure among that 1,000, you count at least on 20 who are serious. At least. At least. At least that 20 must come together and begin to move towards organization. We want to tell you, unless our people are organized, we are wasting time. Unless our energies are directed towards organizations, we are going in circles. We must come to organize our people. The All African People's Revolutionary Party has taken this task upon its shoulder since its inception in 1969 and will not turn it loose for generations. We intend to organize Africans in Africa, Africans in the Caribbean, Africans in South and Central America, Africans in the United States of America, Africans in Canada, Africans in Europe, Africans in Africa into one organization. This is our vision. This is our work. If you think we're crazy, just go for New York. If you think we're out of reach, just go for New York. We're not asking much for you. The United Action Movement should be seen as the movement preaching unity among all the others who refuse to get unity. That's how you'd attract the masses. We're pushing the United African Movement out front. You can speak to your leader. Every time I come here, tell him, he will tell you. Brother Kwame speaks about a lot of things, but the one thing he impresses upon us all the time is African United Front in New York among the organizations. We must learn to live with them. These are just facts. Whether we like the PLC or we do not like the PLC, they're a force, a factor. We must deal with them. Whether we like the United African Movement or not, they're a force, they're a factor. We must deal with them. Whether we like the Nation of Islam or not, they're a force, they're a factor. We must deal with them. These are just facts. We must deal with material reality. Brothers and sisters, we give you this task this evening. The All African People's Revolutionary Party is very weak in New York. New York is a rough area for us. We know the New York police killed Malcolm X. So we know what pigs they are. And we know that if you think you talk about COINTELPRO, if you don't know the local police got a COINTELPRO program, you don't know nothing about COINTELPRO. So the New York police and its COINTELPRO is doing everything to stop our party, but you can't stop revolution. You can kill every revolutionary out there, but you can't stop revolution. This is crystal clear. They killed Zapata over 60 years ago, but the Chapas are fighting seriously in Mexico today with guns. We want to give the task to the United African Movement. We want you to set a tone in New York. We want you to be known as the movement in New York that is preaching unity among the African organizations. We want you to be known as the movement in New York that is doing everything to give symbols of unity to a people who are begging for it. Our party is not strong enough. Were we strong enough, we would undertake this task ourselves. And every time I've met with your leader, this is exactly what our party has told him. My brother, we're not strong enough in New York to do this task. Were we strong enough in New York, we would carry out the task. But you are strong enough. You're directed to New York. It's your base. You can do this task. We want you to do this task. You must do this task for your people. Because once New York has a united front, the rest of the country will follow just like day after night. And once our people have a united front, organizing the masses is a very simple task because all the organizations now have joint efforts in organizing the masses. So, for example, in New York, we could have a rally with the Nation of Islam, the NAACP, the UAMC, the PLC, and bring them all together, and at the meeting, just ask everybody there to join one of these organizations. But we must have this united front. We promise you that we of the All African People's Revolutionary Party will never tire. Zionism, we are going to take them on a slow march to protracted death, but they're not going to stop us from uniting our people. No force on earth can do that. Zionism, we will never compromise with them. We're revolutionaries. We're Nkrumah's Tureis. Nkrumah teaches us any compromise of principle is an abandonment of principle. We are revolutionaries. We live by principle. We will never compromise with it. We will fight it until it is destroyed, because we know it is the major obstacle to unity of our people throughout the world and here in the United States of America. We give you one last statement on Zionism, because sometimes people think that we're just talking and attacking Zionism because we have some special hatred of it. No, 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 no. The special hatred that they have got, they have earned every bit of it. Every bit of it. It is only when we come strong enough to move around the organizations which are dependent upon Zionist forces, which are controlled by Zionist forces. Once we become strong enough, the Zionists themselves will send them to join our united front to find out what's happening. We must have a united front. Our party will not stop. We will continue. Already next week we have meetings with people all over the country to bring this united front into being. We ask the United African Movement to give us the example here in New York. Thank you. Ready for the revolution. I'm dropping on you, so you didn't listen to me. You didn't listen to me, I told you.
Brother Kwame Ture, let's give him a warm, warm round of applause, Brother Kwame Ture. Brother Kwame Ture, Black Power, Black Power, Black Power, Black Organizations, Black Organization, Black Organization. Brother Kwame Ture, we want to thank you very much, and let me say that we take your call very seriously, and I think that one of the things that is very crystal clear, and we're getting ready to go out of here, but I just want to make this point. I said some time ago that the reason why, for example, that we were able to put more than 20,000 people in the streets, Fifth Avenue and Howard Beach, because for one of the few times we demonstrated an African united front right here in New York. Because if you go back and examine Howard Beach, all of the different factions came together as one fist. And it was only because the people saw the different factions coming together as one fist, that the people themselves came out in numbers that exceeded all of us. Nobody had those expectations that more than 20,000 people would assemble on Fifth Avenue. But the people saw all of us together, and they came out in numbers. And this is the same thing that happened on October the 16th. When the people saw various people together, they came out. And I tell people all the time that we will never be able to have a mass movement until we demonstrate an African united front. Now, as many of you know, about 2 years ago, we put a call out for everybody to come to the Slave Theater. And we had more than 50 organizations that came out. The reason why there wasn't any follow-up, to be very frank about it, is because I've always really, I like to stay in the background, be very honest about it. And so I asked other brothers to continue to call. But so what it indicated to me is that not only are the masses of people ready for it, but even various leaders in this city are also ready for it. And I don't think it would be very difficult to bring us together. And I believe that even this particular incident with Time Warner is a catalyst, is an opportunity, again, to bring us together. And so the struggle continues, certainly tomorrow night, but beyond that, to bring all of the forces together, those who naturally allow with us and those who don't naturally allow with us. But the fact of the matter is that we're making the contact, that we're constantly talking to all the brothers and sisters, in addition to those that you do know, we constantly in contact with Elambe Braff, Sonny Carson, Viola Plummer, and other people, because all of them are absolutely necessary, and we certainly hope that one day we can all come together and assemble and deal with the forces of evil that are against us. And so we take that very seriously, Brother Kwame, and hopefully, the next time around, we will be able to give you a good report card. The incompletes that are now on the report card, we hope that they will be turned into A's and A pluses the next time around. And so we are working on it. We haven't flunked. It's only an incomplete. And we are in a process of evolution that will lead to a revolution. And so we're about to leave here, but I know there are three people who are going to leave here with gifts tonight. And we're going to ask Sister Isis to begin to pick. She's going to choose the third prize first. This is for the third prize. What is the third prize? Hold up. Wait a minute now. I can't do that. I can't do that. All right, I can't do that because, see, she just pulled that. Somebody's going to be mad. Violet Baldwin is going to be mad if I put this one back in. Violet Baldwin. 159 Hollywood Avenue. Violet Baldwin. H. Lehman. So, Violet Baldwin's third prize. We apologize, but you have to do it the right way. You have to do it the right way. I asked them to get all of this stuff in order beforehand. And second prize, James Bryson. I know where he is. Brother James Bryson, second prize. What is the second prize? I know it. What is it? Huh? CD player. Let's give Brother James Bryson a warm round of applause. James Bryson, there it is right there. There it is right there. If you don't want it, leave it here. I can make use of it. All right. First prize. Oh, my goodness.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Yo, all I need is one mic, one beat, one stage, one nigga front, my face on the front page. Only if I had one gun, one girl, and one crib, one God to show me how to do things, his son did. Pure, like a cup of virgin blood, mixed with 151, one sip will make a nigga flip. Writing names on my hollow tips, plotting shit, mad balance, who I'm gon' body, this hood politics acknowledging. Leave bodies chopped up in garbages, seeds watch us, grow up and try to follow us, police watch us, roll up and try knocking us. One knee I duck, could it be my time is up? With my luck I got up, the cop shot again. Bust out glass bursts, a fiend drops a Heineken, ricocheting between the spots that I'm hiding in. Blacking out, I shoot back, fuck getting hit. This is my hood, I'm a rep to the death of it, to everybody come on. Little niggas is grown, look rats, don't abortion your wound. We need more warriors soon, shit from the stars, sun and the moon. And it's like the police chases, street sweepers and coppers, sick up kids with no conscience, leaving victims with doctors. If you really think you ready to die, but nine's out, this is what nine's about, nigga, the time is down.
One mic. All I need is one mic. That's all I need. All I need is one mic. All
I need is one blunt, one page, and one pen, one prayer. Tell God, forgive me for one sin. Matter of fact, maybe more than one. Look back at all the hatred against me. Fuck all of them. Jesus died at age 33. That's 33 shots between Glocks and 16 apiece. That's 32, which means one of my guns was holding 17. 27 hits your crew, 6 winners to you. Everybody gotta die sometime. Hope your funeral never get shot up. Bullets tear through the innocent. Nothing is fair. Niggas roll up, shooting from wheelchairs. My heart is racing, facing revenge in the air. I let this shit slide for too many years. Too many times now, I'm strapped with a couple of Macs. Too many nines, if y'all niggas really with me, get busy, load up the semis. Do more than just hold it, explode the clip until you empty. There's nothing in our way. They bust, they rush, we rush. Let's fly and feel it, I feel it in my gut. That we take these bitches to war, lie them down. Cause we stronger now, my nigga, this time is now.
All I need is one mic.
Dirt on my name, jealous cause fiends got they working good plain. Bitches left me cause they thought it was finished. Shoulda knew she wasn't true, she came to me when a man caught a sin. Diamonds are blinded, I never make the same mistakes. Moving with a change of pace, lighter load. So now the king is straight, swelling my melon. Cause none of these niggas real hurt equal. Telling police how can a kingpin squeal. This is crazy, I'm on the right track. I'm finally found, you need some soul searching. The time is now.
All I need is one mic. I ever needed in this world.